So I have to get to the airport and fly home. This paper will address some of the theoretical and practical considerations related to hiring Christian faculty for Christian universities. While my interest for this topic comes out of my work at a Christian university, I do hope that it provides some beneficial information for those of you here who work at secular universities and for others who may just be interested in the topic. I contend that while Christian faculty may not be superior in any sort of empirical sense in their teaching, scholarship, or service, they are nevertheless crucial to the character, identity, and even the survival of the Christian college. Christian faculty enliven the academy with essential attributes that make the Christian college Christian. Christian faculty are also extremely important in their service to non-Christian universities in similar sorts of ways. In both cases, they are the salt and light of the gospel in a world that's in desperate need of Christ. Christian faculty, wherever they teach, are the model for their students, and we've heard that theme today in sessions in this room and I'm sure elsewhere. Some colleges have religious missions, of course, and others are totally secular. Each type, no doubt, has its own particular advantages, and there certainly are great differences between them. State-supported colleges and universities are distinctly secular. These are places where discussions about things religious, whether Christian or otherwise, are often discouraged or may be treated with censure or sometimes harsh criticism. All of my education and employment before my current position was at state-supported institutions, so I am familiar with how these sorts of issues can play out in those arenas. Unfortunately, many secular colleges effectively marginalize religion in the curriculum and more broadly. Dr. Steven Pinker, the best-selling author and Harvard psychologist, said this, "Faith is believing in something without good reason to do so. It has no place in anything but a religious institution, and our society has no shortage of these." Such is the opinion of the intellectual leader at Harvard, or an intellectual leader of Harvard anyway, which is one of America's premier and oldest universities, and which was founded, ironically, to educate Puritan clergy. Substantial research by a number of scholars, including most prominently James Birchall and George Marsden, has demonstrated an almost continuous slide from Christianity to secularism among colleges and universities in the United States. Colleges that were started as Christian enterprises became, in the years since their founding, profoundly secular. Moving from governance based on Christian principles, many of these colleges are now more closely aligned to what some have called a post-Christian culture. In the years since these colleges were founded, Christian thought and practice in the university was marginalized by faculty and by the college leaders. It is clear that religion is no longer in the center of the university, but instead is often considered nothing more than an extracurricular activity at best. The title of Marsden's 1994 book succinctly captures the changes in higher education in the United States from the colonial period to the 20th century. His title is "The Soul of the American University, From Protestant Establishment to Established Non-Belief." That may not say it all, but it does say quite a bit. Harvard University is an example of this phenomenon, and its history as a Christian university is representative of the trend toward secularism that has been repeated time and time again in the United States. Harvard's founding motto was Veritas Christo et Ecclesia, or Truth for Christ and Church. Later, the Christ and Church was removed from the motto in favor of the one-word motto, truth. Truth in this context is void of the religious baggage that was included in the original motto. Changes at Harvard parallel the changes that occurred at many private universities and colleges that were founded on Christian principles. Even state-supported colleges moved from a position accepting, and in some cases even supportive of Christianity, to one of antagonism. For example, 121 years ago, in 1890, there was a survey of state institutions that showed 22 out of 24 of those surveyed required chapel, and church attendance was required at 24 state institutions, or excuse me, four of these 24 state institutions. Yes, please, as you come up, there are handouts there at the front. Things have certainly changed. Regarding this slide and the promotion or even acceptance of Christianity in public institutions, Robert Binney wrote, "Colleges and universities have gradually moved through several phases. First, making education non-sectarian by identifying with the generic, general Christianity, then by an appeal to spiritual and moral ideals of a vaguely religious or patriotic cast, and finally by the exclusion of specifically Christian religious values and practice in the name of allegedly universal intellectual, moral, and democratic values. A relatively smaller proportion of colleges and universities in the 21st century are committed to proclaiming Christ or pursuing godly wisdom. Religion, broadly speaking, became a distinctly private affair in the academy in the centuries after the Enlightenment. There are, of course, many educational options for believers or unbelievers, the religious or irreligious, the seeker or the skeptic. Of the approximately 4,400 colleges and universities in the U.S. classified by the Carnegie Foundation, over 1,700 are private, and approximately 1,000 of these private institutions are religiously affiliated. Christian colleges clearly do not have a privileged status in higher education. Students and faculty alike have many choices when it comes to selecting colleges for their education or for their jobs. For those pursuing undergraduate degrees, there are many secular and religious educational options. Independent Christian colleges and universities, unlike their secular counterparts, can provide an opportunity for the free expression of faith. It was partially for this reason that I sought my current deanship at Belmont University. While I'm not Baptist by denomination, Belmont is a historically Baptist university that had its formal ties with the Tennessee Baptist Convention severed in 2007. While the university separated from the denomination, it continues to present itself as a Christian university and continues its longstanding policy of requiring that all faculty and staff be confessing Christians. The prospective students, as well as the faculty applicants, are clearly informed that Belmont is a Christian university, and this is important. Christian colleges and universities need to be voluntary communities of scholars, and only through this voluntary principle can academic freedom be maintained. The American Council of Education's 1966 Danforth Commission put the voluntary principle this way, and I quote, "Where the purposes of an institution require special faculty qualifications beyond the requirement of impartial scholarship, this should be made clear in advance to candidates for teaching positions and to prospective students. The religious commitments of institutions are a case in point. If, for example, a college intends to be a Christian community and to conduct its work within a Christian context, the appointment of faculty members who are sympathetic with this purpose and can make a contribution to such a community is an important factor for selection. From the point of view of academic integrity, it is essential to make the additional qualifications explicit to everyone concerned." They went on to say, "The selection of personnel is, of course, the indispensable means by which an institution carries out its purposes." And that sentence bears repeating. The selection of personnel is, of course, the indispensable means by which an institution carries out its purposes. Some scholars have created typology of the faculty body of Christian colleges. Duane Litvin, the former president of Wheaton College, identified various types of Christian colleges and universities. The first that he noted was the umbrella model, and I quote, "Umbrella institutions seek to provide a Christian umbrella or canopy under which a variety of choices can thrive, or excuse me, a variety of voices can thrive. Typically, a certain critical mass represents the voice of the sponsoring Christian tradition, so the sponsoring voice remains a privileged one," end quote. The second in Litvin's typology is the systemic model. As the name suggests, systemic model institutions seek to make Christian thinking systemic throughout the institution, root, branch, and leaf. Litvin also makes the case for a type he called an ecumenically orthodox Christian university. These are colleges and universities where the limiting criteria might include, for example, agreement with the Apostles' Creed, or perhaps some other doctrinal stance. Binney created a system of categorizing Christian colleges and universities that includes four types. The first two, the Orthodox and Critical Mass schools, are those colleges where the Christian vision is the organizing paradigm. The last two, the intentionally pluralist and the accidentally pluralist, use secular sources for their organizing paradigms. As is evident by these different models of classifying Christian colleges and universities, there are different ways institutions work to maintain the religious character of the institution. Some Christian colleges and universities require that faculty subscribe to an explicit statement of faith or that they belong to a specific Christian denomination. Other religiously affiliated institutions may simply require that faculty be Christian. Still others have a requirement that a critical mass of faculty be of a particular denomination. The reasons I've become interested in this issue of hiring Christian faculty is due to the difficulties, controversies, or some might even say landmines associated with the issue. Like all colleges, the faculty at Belmont University, my home institution, are not a homogeneous group. From a faith perspective, some are fervently religious and others are not. Some are strongly orthodox in their doctrinal positions and others eschew orthodoxy. Some embrace the institution's Christian hiring policy and others would like to see it go the way of the denominational ties that were severed in 2007. On a practical level, as a dean of a college at a Christian university, I'm interested in finding ways to promote the Christian character of the university while recognizing there are different views among the constituents on how the Christian identity and climate should be promoted or even whether Christianity should have a privileged status. If the Christian climate is to be supported and promoted, the faculty, as Birchall noted, must, quote, include a predominance of committed and articulate believers. Or at least that was his view. In an effort to determine the faculty hiring practices at Christian colleges and universities in the United States, I surveyed deans or chief academic officers from selected institutional members of the Lilly Network of Church-Related Colleges and Universities, or Lilly for short, or the Council for Colleges and Universities, or CCCU for short. Among other things, as a condition for membership, CCCU institutions must have a Christ-centered mission and must, quote, hire as full-time faculty members and administrators only persons who profess faith in Jesus Christ. The Lilly Network does not require that institutional members hire only confessing Christians to full-time faculty positions. However, there are handouts that go over just briefly some of the findings in there. Some here and over there, and probably everyone has one by now. But you can refer to your handout. I'll point out a few issues. Administrators from a total of 180 institutions were surveyed. And of those surveyed, 51 institutions responded, or I should say administrators from 51 institutions, unique institutions, responded. There were 26 from Lilly and 28 from CCCU, and there were three institutions responding that belonged to both. I'll review just selected questions from the survey. First, question number one on the handout, does your institution require that faculty hires be Christian? And out of these 51 institutions, overall 67% required that, 35% of Lilly, and not surprisingly 100% of CCCU institutions required that because that's part of their definition of membership in the CCCU organization. Next, question three on the handout, does your institution require that faculty agree to a statement of faith of some type, yes or no? Of the overall count, yes was 20%, which was 40, or 20 of the overall said yes, that's 40%, and 12% of Lilly institutions is 68% of CCCU. Then I'll jump to question number six, question number five, on the handout. And it asks whether there are other religious criteria the campus utilized in the faculty hiring process. And the following are some representative examples from these open-ended responses. An administrator from a Lilly school said, we don't ask them to relate their discipline and their teaching, we do ask them to relate their discipline and the teaching of it to a Christian worldview. And a CCCU administrator wrote, prospective faculty are expected to write a statement describing how they will integrate faith in the classroom. Similarly, an administrator from a university that belongs to both Lilly and CCCU wrote, we require commitment to Jesus Christ, the inerrancy of Scripture, and biblical Christianity. Yet another said, we only ask that hires be aware of the Christian heritage of our institution. Another question, number six on the handout, sought information related to problems or challenges with their campus hiring policy related to the Christian aspect of it. The following are some representative responses. An administrator from a CCCU school wrote that some disciplines are difficult ones to hire for, and the faith requirement does add another challenge. A Lilly School administrator wrote, for us, these are challenges but not obstacles. We believe that it is possible with the proper commitment and imagination and energy to achieve both serious commitment to institutional mission and academic quality. A CCCU administrator wrote, while I agree with the need to keep a common heart to our faculty, I am unsure that this is sustainable in the academic realm. At the very least, I have many faculty members who dread being assigned to a new search committee, and that should say a lot. And then finally, as far as the questions go, I'll read some from question number seven, which sought information related to benefits at the respondents' campus of the faculty hiring policy as it relates to faith issues. An administrator from a Lilly school wrote, we found that it strengthens the sense of the Christian community by having such a diverse assembly of faith traditions, yet all concurring on major points. That's not to say that we don't have religious disagreements. A CCCU administrator wrote, "We strongly believe that the integration of faith and learning is necessary. After all, if you are a believer, then your faith informs everything. Our campus is afraid of drift, and it is trying to determine how we should keep from the long line of great places which no longer follow their historical ties." Another administrator said, and this is something we've heard today, certainly earlier in a talk that Mark Winslow wrote, and Steve, in the most recent talk here, said some things that relate to this. This administrator said that faculty do more than teach subject matter to their students. More importantly, they share their lives with their students. They model life. The personal qualities of faculty, including their religious commitments, are far more important to any institution such as ours than any experience given, than any expertise in a given academic discipline. And then finally, one said something I'm sure we'd all agree with, and I quote, "Being Christian faculty certainly does not guarantee being trouble-free. The issues are just different." Now, while the overall findings from the study are not crystal clear, some would argue that hiring Christian faculty is the sine qua non of being a Christian university. In the article, The Decline and Fall of the Christian College in 1991, and his later book, The Dying of the Light in 1998, Birchall presented case studies of colleges and universities that were founded with strong connection to Christian denominations, only later to throw off the denominational attachments and become secular. Birchall said, "The only plausible way for a college or university to be significantly Christian is for it to function as a congregation in active communion within a church. If it is not a community that can worship together on some church's terms, then it is or will inexorably become secular." Certainly that's a view that not many hold to, but it's one that he feels is very important. In the current study, only two institutions require that faculty be members of a specific Christian denomination. Some reported that their institution had a goal of maintaining a certain critical mass of faculty that belonged to the school's denominational affiliation. However, it was also reported that the attempt at maintaining a denominational critical mass of faculty was quite challenging. Birchall and Marsden argued that the Christian identity of academic leadership and faculty, along with their commitment to the Christian mission of the institution, are crucial ingredients of efforts to maintain a university's Christian character. Birchall found that even one president could initiate the move away from an institution's Christian moorings. The faculty also, according to Birchall and Marsden, were important contributors to the academy's slide from Christianity. The change in the commitment of faculty may have started as benign neglect, but it later became active indifference and even opposition to the Christian identity of the college or university. Or certainly their scholarship suggests that that's the case in many, many occasions. Numerous scholars have pointed to the faculty hiring process as the linchpin to a school's maintaining its Christian character. Nathan Hatch put it succinctly, and I quote, "The central issue before us is that of recruiting and developing faculty who embody the kind of learning and Christian commitment on which our institutions are based. The mission of many Christian," end quote. "The mission of many Christian colleges and universities calls for faculty members to point students to God and to use the teachings of Jesus as the framework. In the Beatitudes, Jesus said, 'You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven.' I would argue that the job of a Christian college or university is not necessarily that of being a defender of the faith, although they may play a role in some way in that regard. Nor is it the primary goal of a Christian college, to monitor college students' moral behavior. And that's fortunately not the case at most Christian colleges anyway. Further, a Christian college is not primarily about training students for careers, although this naturally comes about as a result of their studies. Certainly, one of the primary goals of a Christian college is to support its students as they grow emotionally, socially, intellectually, and spiritually. Faculty are models for their students. The lives of Christian faculty members, regardless of the type of school where they teach, are expressions of their Christian witness. In the words of Frederick Buechner, Christian faculty can help students, quote, find the place God calls them, a place where their deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Christian faculty play an important role, indeed, I would argue, an indispensable role in the life of the Christian college and in society and culture more broadly. Thank you.